Good evening, and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Just for Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author, Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Hello, you've reached the August 12th, 2012 edition of The Gist of Freedom. I'm your host, Shelley Gaines, and tonight we will be discussing the 145th reunion family reunion of the Steele family and the significance of this. And I hope I have Samuel and William still online.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Samuel. How are you?
How are you?
Good, thank you. Would you like to elaborate a little more about your family and their history and the importance of this event and reunion and celebration?
Well, to me, the importance of the reunion is just to, so that the younger people get to know family history. I mean, a lot of people know that they're related to the family, but a lot of them don't know all the history. And I just think it's really important for younger people to know that, you know, the Steele family, where Levin and Charity originally came from and where they settled in Shemung Township in Medford, New Jersey area, and that the family's just larger than just the one area that sometimes it appears to be. So I think it's real important for the younger generation to help step up and you know, keep the legacy alive.
That's wonderful. And how long have you been attending this reunion?
I've been attending reunions on and off since I was a child. But I was in the military for a while and in and out. But I try to get back here once every couple of years when I have the opportunity. And I thought it was real important this year since the passing of Clarence to come and just to, you know, give respect.
Mm-hmm. And tell us who Clarence was.
Between Clarence and William, they were both kind of the historians of the family. They've been really keeping the history going for the past 30 or 40 years. They've been really been the spearhead of making sure the information getting out, trying to reprint the books and going to the presentations and doing those type of things. So both of them have been very, very important in keeping our history alive.
Oh, okay. And how old was Clarence? Do you know his age of passing?
He was 83.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so he led a nice full life and made sure that, you know, everyone was aware of your history. Is there anything in particular that you're especially proud of in regards to your family history?
All of it. I mean, every bit between, you know, reprinting the book and the Underground Railroad in 2005, which I had the opportunity, was given the opportunity to write the family preference for the book. Knowing the history of Dr. James Steele and how he survived. I often go out to Dr. James Steele's property. I go out to my family. My father's family was the last family that actually lived on the old homestead out in Shemung. So I often go out there and walk the grounds and talk to some of the old neighbors that are still out there and have conversations with them. And it's a good history, and I think it's something that I'm very blessed to know and to have. And I love sharing the story with other folks.
That's wonderful. Now, I know William said earlier that you can purchase the books, and I think there's three books. There's The Underground Railroad. The other book, can you give the title again, please?
Dr. James Steele's Early Recollections of Dr.
Okay.
James Steele.
And then there's one more, I believe, yeah.
The Kidnapped and the Ransom, and that was by Kate Picard.
Right, okay. Now,
and
he gave the...
Go ahead,
I'm sorry.
No, I believe if you Google it, you might find them on Barnes & Noble.
Oh, okay.
And I believe you Google it. There's some places that do have them, so you have to Google it.
Okay.
The books that are purchased to the society goes to help keeping the history going and keep these kind of events going. So that's why we try to promote that.
Oh, all right. All right. So the society, what society, is the Shield Society? Can you explain a little bit about your society?
Shield Family Legacy Society.
It's a Family Legacy Society.
Yes, still family.
Still family, Legacy Society. Okay, and I guess you can Google that too if you want to. If you want
yes,
to buy,
yes, I'm working on trying to update the website.
Okay, all right. So
yeah,
I did ask if you had a website because it seemed like you would, but
yeah, I believe right now it's down. I know they're working on getting it reactivated and updating it. So that's another reason why they've been trying to, until we get that updated, we don't really get that out.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Right.
Well, I just was just amazed that this reunion has been going on for 145 years, and you also incorporate a lot of, I guess, people associated with your family coming and joining the celebration also?
Yes, we do. Because it's all part of our history. We're all interconnected. And, it's a great thing when you come together and families can get together and share time together where you don't see a lot of this. And this is a special moment for us, so we invite everybody.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and hopefully it gets people motivated to want to have reunions on their own, get together. I mean, that's very important.
The one good thing about the Underground Railroad, people have used that book to find their family legacy. People like Dr. Charles Blockson, he was reading the book years ago,
mm-hmm.
and found that his great-grandfather was in the book, and that's how he got started with this whole almost life's work of doing the Underground Railroad work. So
unbelievable.
People like that, there's others. So people use that book because it was the only book written of its time. A lot of other books that were written about the Underground Railroad was written like 40, 50, 60 years later.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting with William Steele's book, Underground Railroad, was that it was written of its time. He was in charge of taking the narratives of the escaping slaves and taking their narratives and writing it down. And so after slavery had ended, after the Civil War, he was commissioned to put that book together. So that book is written in real time.
That's important.
Yes. And that's why it's so significant that book really needs to get out in the universities and the different schools, and because it's up into real time and it's factual. It's not somebody sitting down 60 years later and recurring something that might have happened. It's stories of people who are coming right through at the time, and that's what William's job was.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And the success of your family is. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
Well,
I know you're big landowners.
Part of that family, Dr. James Steele was one that was like I think he was the third or second largest landowner in Medford during those times. And Medford's a small farming community back in those days, and still pretty much a farming community.
Mm-hmm.
But he owned a lot of land there, and he helped. All races of people. It wasn't just, he was called the Black Doctor of Barnburns, but he just didn't minister to African Americans. He ministered to everybody who would come there. But we've through the generations, we've got professional sports players, we've got writers, we've got playwrights, we've got people who do poetry and singers and everybody's talented. We try to bring that out as much as we can.
That's great. Well, what happens a lot of times is that when you come from a background of success and expectation, it hopefully will carry through the rest of the generations where everyone has a desire to succeed and live to their fulfillment, I believe.
Yes, it does make a difference. When you can realize that your family comes from, hardworking and successful people, and you can actually trace that, it does help because it's helped me.
Great. And what do you exactly?
I started telling a story at 9, 10 years old as a little boy. My father had me at a local elementary school telling a story of Dr. James Steele and William Steele and Peter Steele. I carried that on into college. I went to North Carolina A&T, became an architectural engineer, and I do construction management. Now.
Wonderful. Okay. That's very successful. That's fabulous. Anybody else in the family that you would like to feature that are doing great things currently?
there's so many of us. I don't know who to pick and choose. I mean, some of us are very humble and modest about what we do. And when you talk to them, it's amazing. I'm amazed by the stuff they do. Because what I do is, to me, is just what I do for a living. So I don't think everything is, you know, successful. I just do what I do. And I think a lot of us, that's what keeps our family together, too, because we're very humble. I think,
okay.
Generally speaking, we're very humble.
Okay.
And we're very proud of our history, but overall, we're very humble as individuals.
Mm-hmm. I guess that is a nice characteristic to have. You know, you don't always you hear that in this society. Everyone's trying to blow their own horn, but you guys have a lot to blow your horn about. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of history.
I mean, really, some of that humility, you know, just kind of cast it away and really, you know, tell the story here because, you know, you don't hear about too many of these things to begin with, and especially
well,
in the black community, you know. So
so
that's wonderful.
It inspires others to go do it also, to get their family together and do family reunions and those things.
Yeah. Now, where did the original stills come from? Are they from the New Jersey area, or are they slaves and migrated to New Jersey?
Well, the story is that Levin and Charity were both former slaves, and they were in the Eastern Shore of Maryland. We're not exactly sure what the plantation was. We knew their owner was Saunders Griffin, but I'm not quite sure what the exact plot of land or where it was located, but we know it was in Eastern Maryland Shore. And Levin brought his freedom for $500 and relocated to South Jersey in the Pine Branch. His wife, Charity, they already had four children at the time. She escaped twice. The first time she was captured and brought back to slavery. And she took the first attempt, she took all four of her children. The second attempt, she took her two daughters and left the two sons in slavery because the thought was, that the boys would have a better chance of surviving slavery than the young women did.
Mm-hmm.
So she told Peter and Levin that the family's going to relocate in the South Jersey area. And they were both around 8, 9, 10 years old at the time. So she escaped the second time, relocated with my great-great-great-great-grandfather, Levin still. She changed her name to Charity. And they moved to the Pine Branch into the Indian mills. It's called Chemung, but those days it was Indian mills.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, the Pine Branch of South Jersey, even to this day, is pretty rural. And back then it was probably pretty much desolate.
Mm-hmm.
So because they were hiding because she was a fugitive, basically.
Mm.
So she had to change her name, and they had to kind of go and hide it. So. But the amazing part of the story was that Peter and Levin were immediately sold off to a slave owner in Kentucky, and they ended up in Alabama. Levin Jr. died in slavery, but Peter was able to purchase his freedom 40 years later. He came to Philadelphia, traveled all the way from Alabama up to Cincinnati, and came to Philadelphia. And somebody encouraged him to go to the abolitionist office, the Philadelphia Vigilance Committee, and to find out where his family might be, because he remembered the stories of what his mother told him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took William 3 days to get Peter to realize that he was his long-lost brother.
Wow.
And when they finally did, they reunited. He reunited him with his mother in South Jersey, in the Pine Branch.
What a great story.
So there's a... The Kidnapping and the Ransom is all about Peter's life and how he lived through slavery and how him and William got together and worked on freeing Peter's family that was left in slavery. And all the Underground Railroad book has a chapter, and the first couple chapters is about a short segment of how William and Peter got together and did that. And Peter ended up having to pay a ransom of $5,000 to get his family back from Alabama.
Mm. Wow.
So that's all written in a book by Kate Picard called The Kidnapped and the Ransom, Peter and Venus Still Story.
Hmm. Okay, so I guess what you're saying is that once they're a fugitive, I guess they have bounty hunters or something looking for them, and they going back to slavery? Is that correct?
Well, if you go back and check and read through the history, is that when they talk about the Great Compromise of 1850, most people think it was all about land, and it actually wasn't always about land. It was a mere fact that the southern states wanted to have the ability to have slave catchers that would go across the border, the Mason-Dixon line, and have the ability to recover their property. Because understand then, African Americans, the slaves were property to them. They weren't human beings, they were property.
Mm-hmm.
So the southern states allowed the northern states, I think it was the Missouri territory, to become a non-slave state. And the compromise is that they would allow the southerners to be able to go across the Mason-Dixon line and recover their property. So in that, what started then was that then you had slave, you had bounty hunters, you had even other African Americans selling other African Americans back into slavery. Because if you didn't have any documentation of who you were, whether you were free or not, you was almost free game.
Wow, my
goodness. So Charity had to keep her identity secret.
My goodness.
And when William started writing those stories, and as the slaves were coming through, escaping slaves were coming through, he was writing those stories. He had to hide those stories. He hid those stories in a crypt out in the cemetery. He would go at nighttime and put these stories, what he was writing, you know, the stories, in a crypt he had out in the cemetery. He was hiding in a hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
So after slavery ended, he got all this material together, and that's how he wrote this. At that time, it was like almost like a 600-page book.
Amazing.
And highlights all the different people that was partying on the Grand Railroad. And I tell people that Harriet Tubman didn't do her trips all by herself. William still laid the network that she traveled on. And our history doesn't really talk about that.
It does not at all. All you ever hear about is Harriet Tubman. That's very true.
And not to take anything away from what she did. But the feeling is that when you read through history, that Harriet Tubman was this phenomenal woman that just went down south and she took groups of slaves and just brought them north.
Right.
And through the Underground Railroad. But it didn't happen unless William Still had set the network up.
Got it. That's so obviously she must have known this man. I would think.
Yes, they worked very closely together. Between him, Thomas Garrett, and Levi Coffin, they were all working together.
Goodness. Now, who? I believe one of your family members is very successful and passed away as a millionaire. Which brother was that?
I'm not quite sure who that was. I know that Dr. James still had acquired quite a amount of property and stuff. And even William was a coal merchant. William was a phenomenal, if you go back to the history of Philadelphia, William started the first YMCA, African-American YMCA there on Christian Street. He was the provost marshal for Camp William Penn, which was an all-colored marshal, all-colored troop, was mm-hmm. a marshaling point. For the colored troops going into the Civil War, he started the first all black bank, which is the Berean Bank. He helped desegregate the trolley cars in Philadelphia. The story was that he was in Germantown on a snowy day,
mm-hmm.
and then African Americans had to hang off the side of the street called trolley cars. Well, he deemed that it was safer to walk from Germantown back in the center city of Philadelphia. So he walked back into Center City, and he started a boycott, and it took like 10 years for it in order to desegregate the trolley cars in Philadelphia. Now this is all in the late 1800s, if you can imagine it.
Yes. Wow.
So he had a business out there. Whether he was a millionaire, I couldn't really tell you all that, but I'm quite sure he was probably pretty wealthy for being an African American man at that time. He was so notable that there was an election that came up. And at that time, most African Americans had voted Republican because of Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Well, William Still, there was a gentleman that was running for some county ward or whatever, somewhere in the city, and William Still had a, like, the gentleman was a Democrat, and if William Still was putting his, you know, his, he was backing that candidate, and a lot of people were like upset about it. So he actually gave a speech talking about we need to vote for people who we think are the best candidate, not so much of a party, whether it be Republican or Democrat, but we need to do the research and find out about our candidates and do the work. So there's an actual, his speech is actually in the Library of Congress.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So I've had the opportunity, I actually went down, and I think it's online. If you look it up, I think it's online. I'm not quite sure the name or the title is, but I've read it, and I've actually went down to the Library of Congress myself, read it for myself. And it's amazing because when you think about it, this is somebody like in the 1860s talking about, you know, just don't vote for who you think is a party because, you know, of some historical event. You need to find out about, you know, you need to cast your vote on what you think is the best person.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Just the fact that, you know, he was boycotting and doing things way before, you know, hear about these things going on. So that's a great story and a great legacy. Okay, so is there anything else you would like to share about this amazing family of yours?
No, we're just trying to keep the legacy alive, and, you know, definitely thank you for, you know, giving us some time to speak about it and getting the word out. That's what it's all about.
It is wonderful speaking to you, Samuel, and learning about this wonderful family of yours, and we're just trying to encourage more families to get together and have reunions and share their history. So thank you so much for your time. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Hello.
Hello, this is Shelley Gaines wrapping up for this edition of The Gist of Freedom in the review of the Steele 145th Family Reunion. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great evening.